Hi, everyone. Welcome to Two Bald Guys Talking Safety. I'm Langdon DeMint.
And I'm Julian Taylor.
And welcome to our podcast.
Hello. Welcome to Two Bald Guys Talking Safety. My name's Julian Taylor. I'm based in the UK. And I'm here with my good friend, Mr. Langdon DeMint.
And I am not based in the UK. That's funny that you added that. Hopefully we're having some new listeners.
Well, I'd just like to keep people updated.
That's fair. Yeah. And thank you for not sending the hoodie memo today.
Yeah, it's lucky we're just in sync, aren't we? Yeah.
Bald brothers communicate.
For those of you who are just listening and not watching, that will make no sense whatsoever. But myself and Langdon have both rocked up in hoodies today. So. I do have to say, knowing the both of us, that is a fairly high chance that is going to happen each time. So,
No matter the weather outside. Yeah. It's in the morning, you know, when we record these in the mornings, though, sometimes for me at the house, it's a little chilly.
Do you want to know something here? It's 25 degrees outside here, as in C. So that's quite a lot of Fs.
I was going to say, I got to do the quick math. That's all. Yeah. I think, what is that, 60s to 70s?
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
But it's always cool in our house, so I've got the hoodie on because I'm cold inside. Yeah.
I understand.
Today, I think it's going to be a bit of a health and safety ramble. We kind of had a chat about what we wanted to talk about, and we wanted to talk about sort of maybe some trends and health and safety is one of the worst professions in the world for fads and trends. It's not the worst profession in the world. Langdon's pulling a face when I went, it's the worst profession in the world. Why are you doing a podcast if you think it's the worst profession in the world? It's one of the worst professions in the world for fads and trends. We hear it all the time, don't we? Safety 2.0. We hear behavioral safety. We hear safety culture. We've gone through so many of these things. And we were talking about this the other day and just said, is there a danger that if we keep pivoting to one thing from one thing to the next, that actually sometimes we forget the good things that we should keep doing?
I think, no, that's actually a good, well done. Great lady, Andrews. I despise BBS, behavior-based safety. And it's because mine is because when I go back, I'm not old. So let's just get that out there. But from what I've studied and peers, when you look at BBS and the foundation, it's negative. It was created as a really and truly trying to make positive out of negative. So it was looking at a worker as a problem. It was looking at it as a negative and trying to focus on that to make it positive. So, and that's why, now I think, I still revert back to that. So maybe that's my own inner or whatever. But people, I think, have shifted that definition, for example, and trying to make it more positive. But then it gets confusing because you do have some organizations that if you look at a BBS report, they're going through and they're saying, all right, well, Jules is not wearing his PPE properly. He didn't follow versus, okay, we missed a step. Maybe, Jules didn't properly don PPE. Why was that? I want, instead of actually looking through, and that's where you look at human performance, you look at HOP. It's a perfect example of that. Human organizational performance, human factors, things like that. And it turned it a little more in the positive connotation. We're all powerful as humans, the most powerful things in the world. How can we maximize that? Meaning from a work standpoint, good luck. People might say robots. Well, good luck having a robot if someone wasn't able to design that, right? So I think instead of it being negative, that's my thought. And that's one example. I don't like safety culture. I won't go into that, but that's one. I don't need to be totally negative today. It's PGA Championship week. I know it's not going to be released later, but it's an exciting week. But anyways, I think things like that, sometimes we, to your point, we get caught up in the flavor of the month or the trend of what's always been done versus what are we really meaning now, right?
Yeah, and sometimes that's actually just sticking to doing good things, isn't it? The one that, the, well, there's a couple that really, really struck me. First of all, I do have to comment on the PGA week because I think what Langdon's saying there is he'd far rather be watching the golf than recording a pod with me, but we'll move on from that.
It's not you, Jules. It's not you.
And two kind of spring to mind straight away for me. One's an old favourite of mine, so I'll talk about that in a moment. But the first one is hierarchy of control. So when we come to actually managing risk effectively, it's amazing. We have so many conversations with businesses about safety, and I can count on the fingers of one hand, probably even less than that, the number of times anybody's ever talked to me about hierarchy of control. And when we think about risk management, it's just a really nice, simple model, isn't it, that gives us a really good common sense approach to managing risk, which where we start at the top and we say, first of all, can we get rid of this thing? Yeah, if there's something there that's going to hurt somebody, can we get rid of it? And then working down in a sensible kind of order. And what's at the bottom of that hierarchy, Langdon?
PPE,
yeah.
Last line of defense.
And I think I've got an interesting sort of thought here, and I'll throw it out there, and maybe if you want to comment back to us, it'd be really interesting. But COVID had a really interesting effect, didn't it? Because even people who weren't involved with safety, all of a sudden everybody knows what PPE is. I had people come up to me and say, oh, you work in safety. I never knew what PPE was. I know what it is now. Yeah. But also PPE got this sort of really amazing profile through COVID, in that actually it became this thing that everybody had to do and wear, and it was going to protect you. Yeah. But maybe I've mentioned the COVID word too many times for Langdon's liking there, but maybe the downside of that is people kind of almost forgot that hierarchy of control and started to see PPE as more important than it maybe should be in terms of managing risk and managing safety.
I don't want to go down the C word.
Unpeat that lot.
just because people started relying, and this is just as an example, right, on different types of, to your point, facial protection. And the thing about PPE as a whole, to your point, it's the last line of defense. Well, in doing so, sometimes it's really no line of defense, meaning if the particulate size is too small, whatever type of mask, it's going to be irrelevant anyways. You know, if you were wearing an N95 or N99 or a true respirator, okay. But when you slapped
a bit of cloth with a bit of elastic around your face, it's not going to have the same effect.
And that became the thing. And I suppose it probably limited some, right? If I walked up to Jules, he was wearing a cloth mask, and I just, hey, you know, spit or did something. Yes, it's going to limit some. I'm not negating that. But to your point, if we don't understand not just the rationale, but the science behind things, or looking to exactly to what you said, hey, this is the last line of defense. Am I even ensuring that it is rectifying the issue? Is it actually limiting? Am I putting the right? I mean, that's even then, is PPE good if it's the wrong type? If I put on gloves that are not flammable resistant, and I'm going and working in a smoldering plant where I know there's a potential for fire and flames and whatnot, is it any good if I'm wearing latex gloves? You know what I mean? So there's also, when we think of PPE as that last line of defense, is also ensuring that you're even using the proper PPE. Yeah. So it's not only is that control just the hope and pray method, it's the, you know, it is relevant, but are we going through and actually looking and thinking and focusing where we need to and how it can help, or are we just clickbait a little bit?
I'll tell you a couple of stories, because I mean, for those of you who don't know me, I did work for an organization that was one of the biggest PPE suppliers in the UK for a long time. So you kind of notice people using PPE, particularly when they're using it stupidly or badly. But a couple of stories, and the first one was a story that I saw on LinkedIn, actually from one of our guests who was on a while ago. And he was telling this story about he was in Scotland driving to work, and he's following this car in the morning driving to work, and it's slightly erratic in terms of the driving. And this is mid-pandemic. Anyway, he gets on the slip road to drive down onto the motorway and goes past this car, and there's one guy on his own in the car, and guess what he's wearing? He's got the face mask on. He's got the face mask on. So his perception of risk, I would suggest, is pretty skewed in the first place, that he feels the need to wear a mask in a car when he's the only occupant.
You see that a lot, which is funny nowadays.
Yeah. But then secondly, the guy's actually texting on his mobile phone at the same time. So he feels the need to put some control measures in place for against COVID in a car when he's sitting there on his own. But he doesn't perceive any risk in driving his car whilst he's texting. So that was one story. And then the other one that I think is interesting, when we talk about PPE and having this reliance on PPE, which is the last line of defense, was I stayed in this hotel one night, and I came out the next morning, and I'm walking around to go to the car park, and there's a guy doing some work on the path that I'm walking down. And he's actually there with a hammer and a chisel, and he's chipping bits off a paving slab. And what PPE do you think he was wearing, Langdon? This is in broad daylight, by the way.
None.
No. He had some PPE on, so there'd obviously been some kind of risk assessment done. But he was wearing PPE. What do you think he was wearing?
I mean, I know what I hope, but if we're on the theme of a face mask, was he wearing a face mask?
So, sadly, not wearing a face mask.
Oh. A hard hat.
He didn't have a hard hat on, surprisingly.
I don't know.
He had a high-vis jacket on.
Hey!
So in broad daylight, I'm not going to trip over him.
It's good.
And then he did have gloves on. He had a big, big, cumbersome pair of Canadian riggers gloves on, but actually nothing to protect his eyes or his face. From the stone he was going to chip at. And so again, it makes you laugh, because as a safety professional, it does. It kind of amuses me that people have this skewed sort of perception of what they need to wear or what they need to use. And again, the danger is if you forget the hierarchy of controls, actually, you're going to that last line of defense. And if that fails, people are going to get hurt. And don't get me going on high-vis, because high-vis I find the most amusing of all bits of PPE. Because how's high-vis really designed to work?
Reflective.
So it's darkness. So obviously the color draws darker. Your eye to it, but the key thing is that reflection mm-hmm. in there. And so often you just see it used badly or used in the wrong situation, but you've got to wear it because somebody's come up with a rule somewhere that you've got to wear high vis. Yeah.
Maybe it's now because at least it is a bright color or a bright whatever that can be recognized.
Yeah. I think I think on the railways, for example, that they have in the UK, they have to wear orange. Yeah. And the orange is specifically designed to stand out against the background of the scenery if somebody's working sort of trackside. So that kind of does make sense, yeah? But so often it's just used where it's not really required, yeah? Do you know where it came from?
I mean, I do just because you shared it with me, but prior to that, no.
Okay. I didn't know until recently. I read this on a website, which was it was actually a guy who worked for Heinz. He worked in... I'm just going to look at my notes here at this point so I remember it properly. But it actually goes back to the 1930s. A guy called Bob Switzer, and he was working in a Heinz ketchup factory unloading crates.
Love Heinz ketchup.
Yeah. And he got injured so badly in an incident that he went into a coma and ended up in hospital, and it damaged his eyesight. Kind of irrelevant that he ended up in hospital. I think most people could probably assume that if he was in a coma. anyway, to help repair his eyesight, he had to spend time in a dark room. And this is the bit I thought was quite amusing, was his brother entertained him using fluorescent chemicals. Yeah. Who would think, oh, I'm going to go see my brother in hospital or in a dark room. I'm going to take some chemicals with me just to keep him amused whilst we're there.
Well, you know, that's smart people. That's
smart people, but clever people. Because actually what they did was they invented the first fluorescent paint from that situation, called it high visibility paint. And that's where people started to explore other ways of using it. And that's sort of the origins of sort of high vis clothing being worked. And actually, talking about the railways, it was sort of probably in the 60s, that's when the railways started mandating, I think it was in Scotland, first of all, started mandating that you had to wear high vis clothing if you're working trackside. So, yeah.
Very interesting.
Another interesting safety fact from the two bulk guys.
Little safety drop, historical safety drop. You know, it does go to show the emphasis, and right. I mean, it's, I think it's deservingly so. PPE is very needed. Please don't negate that. But it does go to a lot of times how it began with PPE versus that being the very end. Instead of organizations, and I think we still see that a lot of times, depending on where an organization is, I'll say from a maturity and a maybe even a need standpoint, they don't always look at it and think, well, could we actually engineer this out? Could we actually think about totally redoing this job the way it's always been done, even though it's been done that way? If it is high hazard or if it is, you know, potentially very dangerous, could we totally engineer the hazard out? And there's a lot of times, right, no, we can't, but we could at least figure out how to make it a little safer. Same way, that's the whole point of admin when you think about that. Well, that was, I mean, obviously I didn't even throw the first as elimination. I'm not negating that, but hopefully people have nowadays thought about that. So I'm just going to jump into the engineering, but then you go, that's the whole thing of administrative. It's, okay, we couldn't eliminate it. We couldn't engineer it down anymore. We know it's still high. Can we at least rotate workers, for example, or give time off or something to minimize that? You know, there's so many areas that if we actually expand and think about deeper, I think we might realize that there's possibly a couple of more steps that we could consider versus just slapping some PPE on it and calling it a day.
Yeah, and I think one thing you've kind of just triggered with me listening to you there, the other part of it is, and I think this is another area that a lot of businesses struggle with, is actually making sure we go back on a regular basis and review those hazard analysis or risk assessment or whichever terminology you're going to use. There's a danger, isn't there, that actually we've done the risk assessment, we get into using it, and actually, if nothing goes wrong, we just keep doing the same thing because it's working. Yeah. Instead of that sort of fairly regular review that says, is there a better way? Has there been any kind of technological change, any material changes that we could apply that actually allow us to go a step further in terms of our controls? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No, I totally agree. I have nothing to add, ditto.
Thank you. And the other model I was going to talk about, which I think sometimes gets forgotten, sometimes gets scorned. I'm going to use the word scorned here. I was reading an article yesterday and somebody said safety triangles aren't going to prevent serious incidents. So you'll know kind of what I'm alluding to. I'm alluding to that classic kind of safety triangle, Heinrich's triangle, Bird's triangle, whatever you want to call it, where we start to look at sort of the bottom of the triangle, those unsafe acts, those unsafe conditions, those near misses, that if we understand those or we can identify those and know that they're happening, we can start to proactively do something about preventing them and then preventing something more serious happening. And I think think one of the dangers with the models is people have tried to apply numbers to them. And I think you made a point yesterday when we were talking about this, Langdon, which was Heinrich first came up with this in the 1930s. So maybe the numbers have changed. But I think my view is take the numbers out of it and think about principles here, which is if we can get people focused on hazards, yeah, and start to get people to understand them, recognize them, do something about them, we stand a chance of stopping something else happening later down the line.
Yeah, and I think, you know, Heinrich's, obviously there was science to it. There was, I mean, it was from the insurance. They were looking at heavy workers' comps or claims. They were looking at a lot of insight. So it was very, I mean, there was science. There was data that supported that. And even for the time, for the last, you look at, it's almost 100 years now. There was a correlation at the time. Now, is it potentially as valid to the serious number of fatalities we're having? No. I mean, it's, you know, there are some, there are random unfortunate events that occur, but there are also some things that you still see with serious injuries. Well, this person wasn't, you know, whatever, they have a history of not doing, they've had a couple incidents, they have never replaced the machine guard, they knew it, they got towed, they tried to rig something themselves, and then they got seriously injured, lost an arm. I mean, you still hear of that, right? That is, I mean, there's different principles to consider, but that is part of Heinrich's triangle, right? You were experiencing it. But I do think it's when we start, and that's the whole point to me, how I treat it, is it's looking at that job. It's thinking about that overall task. It's looking at all the incidents we've had, you know, yada, yada. But there is a lot to looking at the task and really thinking everything that is involved in that, thinking about the hazards, thinking about the common, the uncommon. And that's when we can really start kind of diving into doing things safer, whether we're thinking about the controls or we're just generally thinking about how to do it better. There's a lot of reflective thought that can come from that on, you know, being safer.
I think just listening to you there again, it's one thing I suppose I hadn't really consciously thought about before was actually part of Heinrich is about creating a mindset change. So actually, if we can start to get people to recognize the importance of hazards, get them to report those things, rectify those things, do things about it, you start to get this mindset shift in terms of safety is important. So actually, when they come to sort of look at their task in more detail or look at the activity in more detail, there's an element in their mind that's talking about, are we doing this thing safely? Or even when they're looking at equipment, they're looking at pipelines. You've got these really uber high profile incidents, haven't you? Deepwater Horizon, Piper Alpha, all of these sort of major incidents that actually there were lots of signals leading up to it. It wasn't a random thing that just happened. There were lots of signals leading up to it. But actually what you need is a health and safety mindset there that when people see those signals, they're prepared to put their hand up and say, stop. Yeah. And Bhopal that we talked about not so long ago was another classic case of that, wasn't it? Where there were all the signals leading up to it that it didn't need to have happened. But actually, the safety mindset wasn't there that people were prepared to do something about it. Yeah. So I think even models like Heinrich, I think take the numbers out. Yeah. And it's actually about the principles of it. And if we can get people focusing on those principles, we start to get a bit of a cultural shift and people look at things differently. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And that's kind of, you know, we were going to do a longer, but we decided to split it up. But that's it, right? We're going from how we've historically done things, how we think about whether it's hazards, risk, control, you know, whatever it is, how we've viewed the organization. And then on the next one, we're going to look at it from a proactive, really it's the same side of the coin. How are we going to do things different to continue changing that mindset and preparedness? Because it, I think Heinrichs and so many others, the controls, I mean, they're crucial, you know, critical controls, for example. Those are, it's funny, they're huge, or I'll say play a crucial role in the impact of reducing serious injury fatalities, because what the critical control does is you're still thinking about it from the control standpoint, but you're thinking, okay, what are the 3-4 things that I have to ensure are in place or I'm going to die, or this worker is going to be seriously injured or whatnot. That's really to what we've been talking about. That's thinking about it from a, well, we've already done an engineering control. We took it out. It should be good. Well, are we really thinking about everything that could happen and how can we ensure that it is as safe as possible? And I dare say in many times, we're not.
No.
I was going to say, mature organizations, you know?
Yeah. I was going to say, go back and listen to the Stephen Kirby exercise. Sort of episode where he talks about what happened to him, and again, just that you got a bunch of people there with the wrong mindset. That was one of the causes behind that. So well, you've probably segued really nicely there for us to wrap things today, and we're going to leave people hanging and say come back for part two, and part two is what Langdon has just described. So we're talking more about that preparedness and proactivity that we can sort of focus on and think about. So thank you from me for listening. I'm going to hand you over to Langdon to finish in his inimitable, said that quite well, style.
Yes, true, indubitably. Well, everyone, we appreciate your time. We look forward to speaking next time, but also hope that you think about some of the things that we've discussed today. It's not rocket science. It's just sometimes thinking things a little different, even when it's the regular thought that you have. And that's where we will go to next time. So as you're going about your weekend, as you're going about your regular work days, as you're talking to the usual people that you talk to, remember to think a little differently, stay healthy and safe, and ultimately watch each other's back out there. Thanks, everyone. Hey everyone, really appreciate you tuning into this episode of Two Bald Guys Talking Safety. Please follow and subscribe to wherever you stream your favorite podcast, or visit us at evotix.com.
And if you want to see how follically challenged we really are, come and check us out on YouTube. If you've got value from the podcast, please go to Apple Podcasts, and in the review section of this podcast, if you could leave us a review or a rating, that would be great.
And as always, everyone, while you're going about your days and about your normal lives, stay safe out there and watch each other's back.